Guardian Unlimited.
Wolf Brother by Michelle Paver is read by Ian McKellen and brought to you by audible.co.uk. Listen out for next week's instalment.
Chapter 7. Three hunters, three lethal flint weapons, all aimed at him. Torak's mind whirled. He couldn't move, couldn't see Wolf. The man gripping his jerkin was enormous. His russet beard was a bird's nest tangle. One cheek was pulled downwards by an ugly scar, and whatever had bitten him had taken off one ear. In his free hand he held a flint-edged knife, its point jabbed under Torak's jaw. Beside him stood a tall young man and a girl about Torak's own age. Both had dark red hair, smooth, pitiless faces, and flint arrows trained on his heart. He tried to swallow. He hoped he didn't look as scared as he felt. "Let me go," he gasped. He took a swing at the big man and missed. The big man grunted, "So here's our thief." He hoisted Torak higher, chokingly high. "I'm not a thief," coughed Torak, snatching at his throat. "He's lying," the young man said coldly. "You took our roebuck," said the girl. To the big man she said, "Oslak, I think you're choking him." Oslak set Torak on his feet, but he didn't loosen his hold, and his knife stayed at Torak's throat. Carefully, the girl replaced her arrow in her quiver and shouldered her bow. The young man did not. From the gleam in his eyes, it was clear that he was enjoying himself. He wouldn't hesitate to shoot. Torak coughed and rubbed his throat, surreptitiously reaching for his knife. "I'll take that," said Oslak. Still gripping Torak, he relieved him of his weapons and tossed them to the girl. She studied Farr's knife curiously. "Did you steal this, too?" "No," said Torak. It was my father's." Clearly they didn't believe him. He looked at the girl. "You said I took your buck. How could it be yours?" "This is our part of the forest," said the young man. Torak was puzzled. "What do you mean the forest doesn't belong to anyone?" "It does now," snapped the young man. "It was agreed at the clan meet because of—" He broke off with a scowl. "What matters is that you took our prey. That means death." Torak broke out in a sweat. "Death? How could taking a roebuck mean death?" His mouth was so dry that he could hardly speak. "If it's the buck you're after," he said, "take it and let me go. It's in my pack. I haven't eaten much." Oslak and the girl exchanged glances, but the young man tossed his head in scorn. "It isn't that simple. You're my captive. Oslak, tie his hands. We're taking him to Finn Kedin." "Where's that?" asked Torak. "It's not a place," said Oslak. "It's a man."
"Don't you know anything?" sneered the girl.
"Finn Kedin is my uncle," said the young man, drawing himself up. "He's the leader of our clan. I am Hord, his brother's son."
"What clan? Where are you taking me?"
They did not reply. Oslak gave him a shove that knocked him to his knees. As he struggled to his feet, he glanced over his shoulder and saw to his horror that Wolf had trotted back to look for him. He stood uncertainly some 20 paces away, snuffing the stranger's scent. They hadn't spotted him. What would they do if they did? Presumably even they respected the ancient law which forbade the killing of another hunter, but what if they chased Wolf away? Torak pictured him lost in the forest, hungry, howling. To warn Wolf to stay out of sight, he gave a low, urgent hoof. Danger! Oslak nearly fell over him in surprise. "What did you say?" "Oof," said Torak again. To his dismay, Wolf didn't retreat. Instead, he put back his ears and raced straight for Torak. "What's this?" muttered Oslak. He reached down and grabbed Wolf by the hackles. Wolf wriggled and snarled as he dangled from the huge red hand. "Let him go," shouted Torak, struggling. "Let him go, or I'll kill you." Oslak and the girl burst out laughing. "Let him go. He's not doing you any harm." "Just chase it away and let's go," said Hord irritably. "No," yelled Torak. "He's my gut."
"No."
The girl threw him a suspicious look.
"He's your what?"
"He's with me," muttered Torak. He knew he mustn't reveal his search for the mountain or that he could talk to Wolf. "Come on, Wren," snarled Hord. "We're wasting time." But Wren was still staring at Torak. She turned to Oslak. "Give it to me." From her pack she pulled a buckskin bag into which she shoved the cub, drawing the neck tightly shut. As she shouldered the wriggling, yowling bag, she told Torak, "You'd better come quietly, or I'll bash him against a tree." Torak glared at her. She probably wouldn't do it, but she'd just ensured his obedience far more effectively than either Oslak or Hord. Oslak gave Torak another push, and they started along a deer track heading northwest. The rawhide bindings were tight, and Torak's wrists began to hurt. "Well, let them," he thought. He was furious with himself. "Look behind you," his father had said. He hadn't, and now he was paying for it. And so was Wolf. No more muffled yowls were coming from the bag. Was he suffocating? Already dead? Torak begged Wren to open the bag and let in some air. "No need," she said without turning round. "I just felt it wriggle." Torak set his teeth and stumbled on. He had to find some way to escape. Oslak was behind him, but Hord was right in front. He looked about 19, well-built and handsome. He also seemed both arrogant and uneasy, desperate to be first, but scared that he'd only ever come second. His clothes were finely made and colourful. His jerkin and leggings, stitched in braided sinew, dyed red, and edged in some kind of birdskin, stained green. On his chest he wore a magnificent necklace of red deer teeth. Torak was mystified. Why would a hunter want so much colour? And that necklace clinked, which was the last thing you needed. Wren resembled Hord in feature, and Torak wondered if they were brother and sister, although Wren was younger by 4 or 5 summers. Her clan tattoos, 3 fine blue-black bars on her cheekbones, showed clearly on her pale skin, giving her a sharp, mistrustful look. Torak didn't think he'd be asking her for help. Her buckskin jerkin and leggings were scruffy, but her bow and quiver were beautiful, the arrows deftly fletched with owl feathers for silent flight. On the first 2 fingers of her left hand she wore leather finger guards, and strapped to her right forearm was a wrist guard of polished green slate. Torak guessed that such wrist guards were worn by people who lived for their bows. That's what matters to her, he thought, not fine clothes, like Hord. But what clan was she? Sewn to the left side of her jerkin, and those of Hord and Oslak, was their clan creature skin, a strip of black feathers, swan, eagle. The feathers were too tattered. Torak couldn't tell. They walked all morning without stopping for food or water, crossing boggy valleys choked with chattering aspen, climbing hills darkened by ever-wakeful pines. As Torak passed beneath, the trees sighed mournfully as if already lamenting his death. Clouds obscured the sun, and he lost his bearings. They came to a slope where the forest floor was bumpy with the waist-high nests of wood ants. As wood ants only build by the south side of trees, Torak worked out that they were heading west. At last, they paused at a brook to drink. "We're much too slow," growled Hord. "We've got a whole valley to cross before we reach the Wind River." Torak pricked up his ears. Maybe he'd overhear something useful. Wren sensed he was listening. "The Wind River," she told him slowly, as if talking to a baby, "is to the west, in the next valley. It's where we camp in autumn, and a couple of day walks to the north is the Widewater, where we camp in summer, for the salmon. They're fish. Maybe you've heard of them." Torak felt himself reddening, but he knew now where they were heading, his captor's autumn camp. It sounded bad. A camp would mean more people and less chance of escape. As they walked, the sun sank lower, and Torak's captors became edgy, pausing often to listen and look about them. He guessed that they knew about the bear. Maybe that was why they'd adopted the unheard-of measure of owning prey, because it was getting scarce. The bear was frightening it away. They descended into a big valley of oak, ash, and pine, and soon reached a wide silver river. This must be the Wind River. Suddenly Torak smelt wood smoke. They were nearing the camp. Chapter 8. As the four of them crossed the river by a wooden walkway, Torak stared down at the sliding water and thought about jumping in. His hands were tied. He'd drown. Besides, he couldn't leave Wolf. About 10 paces downstream, the trees opened into a clearing. Torak smelt pine smoke and fresh blood. He saw 4 big reindeer hide shelters unlike any he'd ever seen, and a bewildering number of people, all hard at work and as yet unaware of him. With a clarity born of fear, he took in every detail. On the river bank, 2 men were skinning a boar, strung from a tree. Having already slit the belly, they'd sheathed their knives and were peeling off the hide by hand to avoid tearing it. Both were bare-chested and wore fish-skin aprons over their leggings. They looked terrifyingly strong, with raised zigzag scars on their muscled arms. From the carcass, blood dripped slowly into a birch-bark pail. In the shallows, 2 girls in buckskin tunics giggled as they rinsed the boar's guts, while 3 small children solemnly made mud cakes and studded them with sycamore wings. 2 sleek hide canoes were drawn up out of the water. The ground around them glittered with fish scales. A couple of large dogs prowled for scraps. In the middle of the clearing, near a pinewood long fire, a group of women sat on willow branch mats, talking quietly as they shelled hazelnuts and picked over a basket of juniper berries. None of them looked anything like Hord or Wren. Torak wondered briefly if, like him, they'd lost their parents. A little apart from them, an old woman was heading arrows, slotting needle-fine flakes of flint into the shafts, then gluing them in place with a paste of pine blood and beeswax. A round bone amulet etched with a spiral was sewn to the breast of her jerkin. From the amulet, Torak knew she must be the clan mage. Far had told him about mages, people who can heal sickness and dream where the prey is and what the weather will do. This old woman looked as if she could do far more dangerous things than that. By the fire, a pretty girl leaned over a cooking skin. Steam crinkled her hair as she used a forked stick to drop in red-hot stones. The meaty smell of whatever was cooking made Torak's mouth water. Near her, an older man knelt to spit a couple of hares. Like Hord, he had reddish-brown hair and a short red beard, but there the resemblance ended. His face had an arresting stillness and a strength that made Torak think of carved sandstone. Torak forgot about the cooking smell. He knew, without being told, that this man wielded power. Oslak untied the bindings and pushed Torak into the clearing. The dogs leapt up, barking ferociously. The old woman made a slicing motion with her palm and they subsided into growls. Everyone stared at Torak. Everyone except the man by the fire, who went on calmly spitting the hares. Only when he'd finished did he rub off his hands in the dust and rise to his feet, waiting in silence for them to approach. The pretty girl glanced at Hord and smiled shyly. "We saved you some broth," she said. Torak guessed that either she was his mate or wanted to be. Wren turned and rolled her eyes at Hord. "Durati saved you some broth," she mocked. Definitely his sister, thought Torak. Hord ignored them both and went to talk to the man by the fire. Quickly he related what had happened. Torak noticed that he made it sound as if he, not Oslak, had caught the thief. Oslak didn't seem to mind, but Wren flashed her brother a sour glance. Meanwhile the dogs had scented Wolf. Hackles bristling, they advanced on Wren. "Back," she ordered. They obeyed. Wren ducked into the nearest shelter and emerged with a coil of woven bark rope. She tied one end round the neck of the bag containing Wolf, tossed the other over the branch of an oak tree, and hoisted the bag high, well out of the dog's reach. "And out of mine," realized Torak. Now, even if he got the chance to escape, he couldn't, not without Wolf. Wren caught his eye and gave him a wry grin. He scowled back. Inside, he was sick with fear. Hord had finished talking. The man by the fire nodded once, and waited for Oslak to push Torak towards him. His eyes were an intense, unblinking blue, vividly alive in that impenetrable face. Torak found it hard to look into them for long, and even harder to look away. "What is your name?" said the man in a voice that was somehow more frightening for being so quiet. Torak licked his lips. "Torak, what's yours?" But he thought he already knew. It was Hord who answered. "He is Finn Kedin, leader of the Raven Clan, and you miserable little runt, should learn more respect." Finn Kedin silenced Hord with a look, then turned to Torak. "What clan are you?" Torak raised his chin. "Wolf." "Well, there's a surprise," remarked Wren, and several people laughed. Finn Kedin wasn't one of them. His burning blue eyes never left Torak's face. "What are you doing in this part of the forest?"
"Heading north," said Torak. "I told him it belongs to us now," Hord put in quickly.
"How could I know that?" said Torak. "I wasn't at the clan meet."
"Why not?" said Finn Kedin. Torak did not reply. The raven leader's eyes drilled into his. "Where are the rest of your clan?"
"I don't know," said Torak truthfully. "I've never lived with them. I lived with my father."
"Where is he?"
"Dead. He was killed by a bear."
A hiss ran through the watchers. Some glanced fearfully over their shoulders. Others touched their clan creature skins or made the sign of the hand to ward off evil. The old woman left her arrows and came towards them. No emotion showed in Finn Kedin's face. "Who was your father?"
Torak swallowed. He knew, and so must Finn Kedin, that it is forbidden to speak a dead person's name for 5 summers after they die. Instead, they can only be referred to by naming their parents. Far had hardly ever talked about his family, but Torak knew their names and where they'd come from. Far's mother had been Seal Clan. His father had been Wolf Clan. Torak named them both. Recognition is one of the hardest expressions to conceal. Not even Finn Kedin could hide it completely.
"He knew Far," thought Torak, aghast. "But how? Far never mentioned him. Or the Raven Clan. What does this mean?"
He watched Finn Kedin run his thumb slowly across his bottom lip. It was impossible to tell whether Torek's father had been his best friend or his deadliest enemy. At last, Finn Kedin spoke. "Share out the boy's things between everyone," he told Oslak. "Then take him downstream and kill him."
Chapter 9.
Torak's knees buckled.
"What?" he gasped. "I didn't even know the buck was yours. How can I be guilty if I didn't know?"
"It's the law," said Finn Kedin.
"Why? Why? Because you say so?"
"Because the clans say so."
Oslak put a heavy hand on Torak's shoulder.
"No," cried Torak. "Listen, you say it's the law, but there's another law, isn't there?" He caught his breath. "Trial by combat. We fight for it."
He wasn't sure if he got that right. Far had only mentioned it once when he was teaching him the law of the clans, but Finn Kedin's eyes narrowed.
"I'm right, aren't I?"
Torak insisted, forcing himself to give the raven leader stare for stare.
"You don't know for sure if I'm guilty, because you don't know whether I actually knew the buck was yours. So, we fight. You and me."
He swallowed.
"If I win, I'm innocent. I live. I mean, me and the wolf. If I lose, we die."
Some of the men were chuckling. A woman tapped her brow, shaking her head.
"I don't fight boys," said Finn Kedin.
"But he's right, isn't he?" said Wren. "It's the oldest law of all. He has the right to fight."
Hord stepped forward. "I'll fight him. I'm closer to him in age. It'll be fairer."
"Not by much," Wren said dryly.
She was leaning against the tree from which Wolf was suspended. Torak saw that she'd loosened the neck of the bag a little so that Wolf's head was poking out. He looked bedraggled, but was gazing curiously down at the 2 dogs slavering beneath him.
"What do you say?"
Fincadin," said the mage. "The boys ride. Let them fight."
Fincadin met the old woman's eyes, and for a moment there seemed to be a battle of wills between them. Slowly, he nodded.
Relief washed over Torak.
Everyone seemed to be excited by the prospect of a fight. They talked in huddles, stamping their feet, their breaths steaming in the chill evening air. Oslak tossed Torak his father's knife. "You'll need that, and a spear, and an arm guard."
"A what?"
asked Torak. The big man scratched the scar where his ear had been. "You know how to fight, don't you?"
"No," said Torak.
Oslak rolled his eyes. He went off to the nearest shelter and returned with an ashwood spear tipped with a vicious basalt point and what seemed to be a length of triple-thickness reindeer hide. Torak took the spear uncertainly and watched in puzzlement as Oslak strapped the toughened hide round his right forearm for him. It felt as heavy and unwieldy as a haunch of deer meat. He wondered what he was supposed to do with it. Oslak nodded at the bandage on Torak's other arm and grimaced.
"Seems like the odds are against you."
"Just a bit," thought Torak.
When he'd suggested a fight, he'd had in mind a wrestling bout, with maybe some knife play thrown in, the sort of thing he and Far used to practice quite often, but just for fun. Clearly, to the ravens, a fight meant something else. Torak wondered if there were special rules and whether it would look weak to ask. Fincadin prodded the fire, making sparks fly. Torak watched him through a shimmer of heat haze.
"There's only one rule," said Fincadin, as if he'd guessed Torak's thoughts. "You can't use fire, do you understand?"
His eyes caught and held Torak's. Torak nodded distractedly. Not using fire was the least of his worries. Behind Fincadin he could see Hord having his arm guard strapped on. He had taken off his jerkin. He looked enormous and frighteningly strong. Torak decided against taking off his own jerkin. No need to emphasize the contrast. He untied everything from his belt and laid it in a pile on the ground. Then he wound a length of woven grass twine round his forehead to keep his hair out of his eyes. His hands were slippery with sweat. He stooped and rubbed them in the dust. Someone touched his shoulder, making him jump. It was Wren. She was holding out a birch-bark beaker. He took it gratefully and drank. To his surprise, it was elderberry juice, tart and strengthening. Wren saw his surprise and shrugged. "Hord's had a drink. It's only fair." She pointed to a pail by the fire. "There's water when you need it." Torak handed back the beaker.
"I don't think it'll last that long."
She hesitated.
"Who knows?"
A hush fell. The watchers formed a ring round the edge of the clearing with Torak and Hord in the middle, near the fire. There were no formalities. The fight was on. Warily, they circled each other. For all his size, Hord moved with the grace of a lynx, flexing his knees and repositioning his fingers on knife and spear. His face was taut, but a small smile played about his lips. He loved being the centre of attention. Torak didn't. His heart was hammering against his ribs. Dimly he could hear the watchers shouting encouragement to Hord, but their voices were muffled as if he were underwater. Hord's spear lunged for his chest, and he dodged just in time. He felt the sweat start out on his forehead. Torak tried the same move, hoping it didn't look like copying.
"Copying won't get you very far," called Wren.
Torak's face burned. He and Hord were moving faster now. In places, the ground was slimy with boar's blood. Torak slipped and nearly went down. He knew he couldn't hope to win by force. He'd have to use his wits. The trouble was, he only knew two fighting tricks, and he hadn't practiced them more than a few times. "Here goes," he thought recklessly. He jabbed his spear at Hord's throat. As expected, Hord's hide arm rose to block it. Torak tried a quick undercut to the belly, but Hord parried it with alarming ease, and Torek's spear slid harmlessly off his arm guard. He knew that one, thought Torak. With every move, it was becoming obvious that Hord was a seasoned fighter.
"Come on, Hord," yelled a man. "Give him a red skin."
"Give me time," Hord called back with a curl of his lip, a ripple of laughter. Torek tried his second trick. Feigning total incompetence, which wasn't hard, he hit out wildly, tempting Horde with a glimpse of his unprotected chest. Horde took the bait, but as his spear came in to strike, Torek's guard arm swung across to meet it. Horde's spear point sank into the thick hide guard, nearly knocking Torek off his feet, but Torek managed to keep to his plan by twisting his guard arm sharply upwards. Horde's spear shaft snapped in two. The watchers groaned. Horde staggered back, without a spear. Torek was astonished. He hadn't expected it to work. Horde recovered swiftly. Lunging forwards, he jabbed his knife into Torek's spear hand. Torek cried out as the flint bit between finger and thumb. He lost his footing and dropped his spear. Horde lunged again. Torek only just managed to roll away in time and scramble to his feet. Now they were both spearless, both down to knives. To gain some breathing space, Torek dodged behind the fire. His chest was heaving and his wounded hand throbbed. Sweat was pouring down his sides. He bitterly regretted not copying Horde and taking off his jerkin.
"Hurry up, Horde!" yelled a woman. "Finish him off!"
"Come on, Horde!" shouted a man. "Is this what they taught you in the deep forest?"
By now, though, not all shouts were for Horde. There was a smattering of encouragement for Torek, although he guessed it was less genuine support than pleased surprise that he was lasting longer than expected. He knew it wouldn't be much longer. He was tiring rapidly, and he'd run out of tricks. Horde was taking control.
"Sorry, Wolf," he told the cub silently. "I don't think we're going to get out of this."
From the corner of his eye, he glimpsed Wolf high in the tree. He was wriggling and yowling in a haze of steamy breath.
"What's happening?" he was asking. "Why won't you come and free me?"
Torek leapt aside to avoid a knife slash across his throat.
"Concentrate," he told himself grimly. "Forget about Wolf." And yet something was nagging him. Something about Wolf. What was it?
He glanced at Wolf yowling in the tree, his breath steaming.
"You can't use fire," Finkeddin had said.
Suddenly, Torek's mind flooded clear, and he knew what to do. Jabbing and feinting, he edged sideways, putting the fire between them once more.
"Hiding again," taunted Horde.
Torek jerked his head at the birch-bark water pail.
"I want a drink. All right?"
"If you must, boy."
Keeping his eyes on Horde, Torek squatted and cupped water to drink. He did it slowly, to make Horde think he was up to something with the water pail, and to distract attention from the cooking skin bubbling by the fire. It worked. Horde stepped closer to the fire, looming over it, to intimidate Torek.
"You want a drink too?" said Torek, still squatting.
Horde snorted his contempt. Suddenly Torek lashed out, but at the cooking skin. Jabbing his knife into the tough hide, he upended it and sent boiling broth pouring onto the white-hot embers. Hissing clouds of steam billowed into Horde's face. The watchers gasped. Torek seized his chance and jabbed at his opponent's wrist. Blinded, Horde howled in pain and dropped his knife. Torek kicked it away, then threw himself on Horde, knocking him to the ground. As Horde lay winded, Torek straddled his chest and knelt on his arms to pin them down. For one roaring heartbeat, his sight misted red and he knew the urge to kill. He grabbed a handful of dark red hair and bashed Horde's head once against the earth. Then he felt strong hands on his shoulders pulling him off.
"It's over," said Finkeddin behind him.
Torek struggled in his grip. Horde sprang up and scrambled for his knife. Panting and glaring, they faced each other.
"I said, it's over," snapped Finkeddin.
Chaos erupted among the watchers. They didn't think he was over at all. He cheated. He used fire.
No, he won fairly enough. Who's to say? They'll have to fight it out again.
Both Torek and Horde looked appalled at that.
"The boy won," said Finkeddin, releasing his grip on Torek.
Torek shook himself and wiped the sweat from his face as he watched Horde resheathing his knife. Horde was furious, though whether with himself or with Torek it was impossible to tell. Durati put her hand on his arm, but he shook it off angrily and pushed his way through the others, disappearing into one of the shelters. Now that the bloodlust had left him, Torek felt shaky and sick. He sheathed his knife and looked round for his things. Then he saw Finkeddin watching him.
"You broke the rule," the Raven Leader said calmly. "You used fire."
"No, I didn't," said Torek. He sounded a lot more confident than he felt. "I didn't use fire. I used steam."
"I would have preferred it," said Finkeddin, "if you'd used water instead of broth. That was a waste of good food." Torek did not reply. Finkeddin studied him, and for a moment there was a gleam of humour in his blue eyes.
Moslak pushed through to them with a bag containing wolf in his arms. "Here's that cub of yours," he boomed, tossing the bag at Torek with a force that made him stagger. Wolf squirmed and licked Torek's chin and told him how awful it had been all at once. Torek wanted to say something comforting, but stopped himself. It would be stupid to slip up now.
"The law's the law," Finkeddin said briskly. "You won. You're free to go."
"No!"
A girl's voice rang out and all heads turned. It was Ren.
"You can't let him go," she cried, running forward.
"He just has," retorted Torek. "You heard him. I'm free."
Ren spoke to her uncle. "We can't let him go. This is too important. He might be..."
She drew Finkeddin aside, whispering urgently.
Torek couldn't make out what she was saying, but to his dismay, others drew closer to listen.
The mage scowled and nodded.
Even Hord emerged from the shelter, and when he heard what they were saying, he gave Torek a strange, wary stare.
Finkeddin studied Ren thoughtfully. "Are you sure about this?"
"I don't know," she said. "Maybe he is, maybe he isn't. We need time to find out."
Finkeddin stroked his beard. "What makes you suspect?"
"The way he defeated Hord, and I found this in his things."
She held out her palm, and Torek saw his little grouse bone whistle.
"What do you use it for?" she asked him.
"For calling the cub," he replied. She blew on it, and Wolf twisted in his arms. A shiver of unease ran through the crowd. Ren and Finkeddin exchanged glances.
"It doesn't make any noise," she said accusingly.
Torek did not reply. He realized with a jolt that her eyes were not light blue like her brother's, but black as a peat pool. He wondered if she was a mage, too. She turned to Finkeddin.
"We can't let him go till we know for sure."
"She's right," said the mage.
"You know what it says as well as I do. Everyone does."
What says?" pleaded Torek.
"Finkeddin, we had a pact. We agreed that if I won the fight, me and Wolf would go free."
"No," said Finkeddin. "We agreed that you would live. And so you shall, at least for now. Oslak, tie him up again."
"No,"
shouted Torek. Ren raised her chin. "You said your father was killed by a bear. We know about that bear. Some of us have even seen it." Beside her, Hord shuddered and began to gnaw his thumbnail. "About a moon ago it came," Ren went on quietly. "Like a shadow it darkened the forest, killing wantonly, even killing other hunters, wolves, a lynx. It was as if it was searching for something." She paused. "Then, 13 days ago, it disappeared. A runner from the Boer clan tracked it south. We thought it had gone. We gave thanks to our clan guardian." She swallowed. "Now it's back. Yesterday our scouts returned from the west. They'd found many kills right down to the sea. The whale clan told them that 3 days ago it took a child." Torek licked his lips. "What's this got to do with me?"
"There's a prophecy in our clan," said Ren, as if he hadn't spoken.
"A shadow attacks the forest. None can stand against it." She broke off, frowning. The mage took up her words. "Then comes the listener. He fights with air and speaks with silence." Her gaze fell on the whistle in Ren's hand. Everyone was silent, watching Torek.
"I'm not your listener," he said.
"We think you might be," replied the mage. Torek thought about the prophecy. The listener fights with air. He had done just that. He had used steam.
"'What happens to him?' he asked in a low voice. "'What happens to the listener in the prophecy?' But he had a terrible feeling that he already knew. The silence in the clearing grew more intense. Torak looked from the frightened faces around him to the flint knife at Oslak's belt. He looked at the glistening carcass of the boar hanging from the tree, at its dark blood trickling into the pail beneath. He felt Finkeddin's eyes on him and turned to face the burning blue gaze. "The listener," quoted Finkeddin, "gives his heart's blood to the mountain, and the shadow is crushed. His heart's blood. Under the tree the blood dripped softly into the basin. Drip, drip, drip."
The first three books in the Chronicles of Ancient Darkness series by Michelle Paver are available to download at audible.co.uk for the special multi-buy price of $14.99 until the end of August. If you enjoyed Wolf Brother, you'll want to join The Clan, the official worldwide fan site for all readers of the Chronicles of Ancient Darkness series. The Clan is where thousands of fans just like you meet for games and chat, role-playing, art competitions, writing contests and quizzes. Best of all, it's free. So go to www.torak.info, that's TORAK.INFO, and join The Clan now.
Guardian Unlimited.